over, and Vanis struck up a conversation with one of them about the embassy from Patras, due to arrive in a few days. Damon was lashed to the seat on the other side, facing them. There was an air of unreality about what was happening. Ansel's master was delineating the encounter. The slave would be tied up, and Ansel would use his mouth. Vanis protested that it was so rare for the prince to agree to a performance. They should make the most of it. Ansel's master would not be swayed. This was really going to happen. Damon gripped the metalwork of the bower, his wrists cuffed to it above his head. He was going to be pleasured for a Varetian audience. He was probably just one of a dozen discreet entertainments that would unfold in this garden. Damon's eyes fixed on Ansel. He almost told himself that this was not the pet's fault, except that, in large part, it was. Ansel dropped to his knees and found his way into Damon's slave garments. Damon looked down at him and could not have felt less aroused. Even under the best of circumstances, green-eyed, red-haired Ansel was not his type. He looked about 19, and though his was not the obscene youth of Nikkei's, his body was delicately boyish. His beauty was, in fact, polished, self-conscious prettiness. Pet, thought Damon. The word fit. Ansel pushed his long hair to one side and began without any formality. He was practiced and manipulated Damon expertly with mouth and hands. Damon wondered if he should feel sympathetic or pleased that Ansel was not going to have his moment of triumph. Not even half-hard under Ansel's ministrations, Damon doubted he would be able to come for the pleasure of an audience. If there was anything explicit on view, it must be the absence of all desire to be where he was. There was a faint rustle, and cool as the water beneath the lily, Laurent came to sit beside him. "I wonder if we can do better than this," Laurent said. "Stop." Ansel detached himself from his endeavors and looked up, lips wet. "You're more likely to win a game if you don't play your whole hand at once," said Laurent. "Start more slowly." Damon reacted to Laurent's words with inevitable tension. Ansel was close enough for Damon to feel his breath, a hot, focused cloud of heat that rolled in place, a susurration over sensitive skin. "Like this?" Ansel asked. His mouth was an inch from its destination, and his hands slid softly up Damon's thighs. His wet lips parted slightly. Damon, against his will, reacted. "Like that," said Laurent. "Shall I?" said Ansel, leaning forward. "Don't use your mouth yet," said Laurent. "Just your tongue." Ansel obeyed. He tongued the head. An elusive touch, barely the suggestion of itself. Not enough pressure. Laurent was watching Damon's face with the same cerebral attention that he might apply to a strategic problem. Ansel's tongue pressed into the slit. "He likes that. Do it harder," said Laurent. Damon swore, a single Acheron word. Unable to resist the flickering lures being played across its flesh, his body was awakening and beginning to crave rhythm. Ansel's tongue curled lazily around the head. "Now lick him, the whole length." Cool words preceded a long, hot lick, wet from base to tip. Damon could feel his thighs tighten, then minutely spread, his breath quickening in his chest. He wanted out of the restraints. There was a metallic sound as he pulled against the cuffs, his hands fists. He turned towards Laurent. It was a mistake to look at him. Even in the shadows of evening, Damon could see the relaxed arrangement of Laurent's body, the marmoreal perfection of his features, and the detached unconcern with which he gazed at Damon, not bothering to so much as glance down at Ansel's moving head. If you believed the prince's guard, Laurent was the impregnable citadel and took no lovers at all. Right now, Laurent gave the impression of a mind somewhat engaged and a body wholly aloof. untouched by ardor. The ribald fancy of the prince's guard held a kernel of plausibility. On the other hand, the aloof, untouched Laurent was at this moment delivering a precise treatise on cocksucking. And Ansel obeyed instruction, his mouth doing what it was told. Laurent's commands were leisurely, unhurried, and he had the refined practice of suspending his engagements at the very moment they began to get interesting. Damon was used to taking pleasure where he wished, touching where he wanted, coaxing responses from his partners as he pleased. Frustration peaked as gratification was stymied, relentlessly. Every part of him suffused with thwarted sensation. The cool air over his hot skin, the head in his lap, just one part of a whole that included the awareness of where he was and who was sitting beside him. "Push down on it," Laurent said. Damon felt the breath release shatteringly from his chest at the first long, wet slide down onto his cock. Ansel couldn't quite take it all, though his throat was exquisitely trained, lacking a gag reflex. Laurent's next order came like a tap on the shoulder, and Ansel drew obediently back up to do no more than suckle the head. Damon could hear the sound of his own breathing now, even over the clamoring of his flesh. Even without rhythmical attention, diffuse pleasure was beginning to coalesce into something more urgent. He could feel the shift, the orientation of his body towards climax. Laurent uncrossed his legs and rose. "Finish him off," said Laurent, incidentally and without a backwards glance, returning to the other courtiers to make a few remarks about the subject currently under discussion, as though he had no particular need to see out the conclusion now that it was inevitable. The image of Ansel absorbing his erection was joined in his fragmenting thoughts by the sudden harsh desire to get his hands on Laurent's body and exact revenge, both for his actions and for his airy absence. Orgasm rolled up like flame over a hot surface, stripping out seed that was, professionally, swallowed. "A little slow in the beginning, but quite a satisfactory climax," said Vannis. Damon was unshackled from the lover's seat and pushed back down onto his knees. Laurent was seated opposite, legs crossed. Damon's eyes fixed on him and looked nowhere else. His breathing was still noticeable, and his pulse rapid, but anger produced all the same effects. The musical sound of bells intruded on the gathering. Nicaise interrupted without any sign of deference to those of higher rank at all. "I'm here to speak to the prince," said Nicaise. Laurent lifted his fingers minutely, and Vannis, Ansel, and the others took it as a signal to make a brief obeisance and depart. Nicaise came to stand in front of the bench and stared at Laurent with an expression of hostility. Laurent, for his part, was relaxed, one arm spread out over the back of the bench. "Your uncle wants to see you."
"Does he? Let's make him wait."
One pair of unlikable blue eyes stared at another. Nicaise sat down. "I don't mind. The longer you wait, the more trouble you'll be in." "Well, as long as you don't mind," said Laurent. He sounded amused. Nicaise lifted his chin. "I'm going to tell him you waited on purpose."
"You can if you like. I just assumed he'd guess, but you can save him the effort. Since we're waiting, shall I call for refreshments?"
He gestured to the last of the tray-bearing servants, who stopped his retreat and approached. "Do you take wine, or aren't you old enough yet?"
"I'm 13. I drink whenever I like."
Nicaise scorned the tray, pushing at it so hard it almost overbalanced. "I'm not going to drink with you. We don't need to start pretending politeness."
"Don't we? Very well. I think it is 14 by now, isn't it?"
Nicaise turned red under the paint.
"I thought so," said Laurent. "Have you thought about what you're going to do after? If I know your master's tastes, you have another year at most. At your age, the body begins to betray itself. and then reacting to something in the boy's face. Or has it started already? The red grew strident.
That isn't any of your business.
You're right, it isn't, said Laurent. Nicaise opened his mouth, but Laurent continued before he could speak. I'll offer for you, if you like, when the time comes. I wouldn't want you in my bed, but you'd have all the same privileges. You might prefer that.
I'd offer.
Nicaise blinked and then sneered.
With what?
A breath of amusement from Laurent.
Yes, if I have any land left at all, I may have to sell it to buy bread. Never mind pets. We will both have to navigate the next 10 months on the tips of our toes.
I don't need you.
He's promised. He's not going to give me up.
Nicaise's voice was smug and self-satisfied.
He gives them all up, said Laurent. Even if you're more enterprising than the others have been.
He likes me better than the others. A scornful laugh.
You're jealous.
And then it was Nicaise's turn to react to something he saw in Laurent's face, and he said, with a horror Damon didn't understand,
"You're going to tell him you want me."
"Oh," said Laurent, "no, Nicaise. No, that would wreck you. I wouldn't do that." Then his voice became almost tired. "Maybe it's better if you think that I would. You have quite a good mind for strategy to have thought of that. Maybe you will hold him longer than the others." For a moment it seemed as if Laurent would say something else. But in the end, he just stood up from the bench and held his hand out to the boy. "Come on, let's go. You can watch me get told off by my uncle."
Chapter 6
"Your master seems kind," said Erasmus.
"Kind?" said Damon. The word was difficult to get his mouth around, grating in his throat as he pushed it out. He looked across in disbelief at Erasmus.
Nicaise had trailed off hand in hand with Laurent, leaving Erasmus behind, his leash forgotten on the ground beside him where he knelt.
A soft breeze shifted his fair curls, and above them foliage moved like an awning of black silk.
"He cares for your pleasure," explained Erasmus.
It took a moment for those words to attach to their correct meaning, and when they did, a breath of helpless laughter was the only possible response. Laurent's precise instructions, and their inevitable result, had not been intended as a kindness, but rather the opposite. There was no way to explain Laurent's cool, intricate mind to the slave, and Damon didn't try.
"What is it?" said Erasmus.
"Nothing. Tell me, I wished for news of you and the others. How is it for you, so far from home? Are you well treated by your masters? I wondered, can you understand their language?"
Erasmus shook his head at the last question. "I have a little skill with Patrin and the northern dialects. Some words are similar."
Haltingly, he said a few of them. Erasmus managed the Varetian well enough. That was not what made Damon frown. The words Erasmus had been able to decipher from what had been said to him were,
"Silence. Kneel down. Don't move."
"Did I misspeak?" said Erasmus, misinterpreting the expression.
"No, you spoke well," Damon said, though his consternation remained. He didn't like the choice of words. He didn't like the idea that Erasmus and the others were rendered doubly powerless by an inability to speak or understand what was being said around them.
"You do not have the manner of a palace slave," offered Erasmus, hesitantly.
That was an understatement. No one from Akelos would mistake Damon for a body slave. He had neither the manner nor the physique.
Damon regarded Erasmus thoughtfully, wondering how much to say.
"I was not a slave in Akelos. I was sent here by Castor as punishment," he said, eventually. There was no point lying about that part of it.
"Punishment," said Erasmus. His gaze dropped to the ground. His whole manner changed. Damon said, "But you were trained in the palace?"
How long were you there? He couldn't account for the fact that he had not seen this slave before. Erasmus attempted a smile, rallying himself from whatever had disheartened him.
Yes, but I never saw the main palace. I was in training silks until I was chosen by the keeper to come here. And my training in Akalos was very strict. It was thought... That is,
said Damon. Erasmus blushed and said in a very soft voice,
In case he found me pleasing, I was being trained for the prince.
Were you? Said Damon, with some interest.
Because of my coloring. You can't see it in this light, but in daylight my hair is almost blonde.
I can see it in this light, said Damon. He could hear the approval saturating his own voice. He felt it shift the dynamic between them. He might as well have said, Good boy.
Erasmus reacted to the words like a flower inclining toward sunlight.
It didn't matter that he and Damon were technically the same rank. Erasmus was trained to respond to strength, to yearn for it, and submit to it. His limbs subtly rearranged themselves, a flush spreading on his cheeks, his eyes dropping to the ground. His body became a supplication. The breeze toyed irresistibly with a curl that had tumbled over his forehead. In the softest little voice he said, This slave is beneath your attention. In Akalos, submission was an art, and the slave was the artisan. Now that he was showing his form, you could see that Erasmus was surely the prize pick of the regent's gift slaves. Ridiculous that he was being dragged around by the neck like an unwilling animal. It was like possessing a finely tuned instrument and using it to smash shells open. Misusing it. He should be in Akalos, where his training would be feted and prized. But it occurred to Damon that Erasmus might have been lucky in being chosen for the regent. Lucky in never having come to the attention of Prince Damianos. Damon had seen what had happened to the closest of his personal slaves. They had been killed. He pushed the memory forcibly out of his mind and returned his attention to the slave in front of him. Damon said, And is your own master kind?
This slave lives to serve, said Erasmus.
It was a formulaic set phrase and meant nothing. The behavior of slaves was tightly prescribed, with the result that what was unsaid was often more important than what was said. Damon was already frowning a little when he chanced to look down. The tunic Erasmus wore had been slightly disordered when he had used it to wipe Damon's cheek, and he'd had no chance to right it. The hem had lifted high enough to expose the top of his thigh. Erasmus, seeing the direction of Damon's gaze, quickly pulled the cloth down to cover himself, stretching it as far as it would go.
"What happened to your leg?" said Damon.
Erasmus had gone ivory white. He didn't want to answer, but would force himself to because he'd been asked a direct question. "What's wrong?" Erasmus's voice was barely audible, his hands clutching the hem of his tunic.
"I am ashamed."
"Show me," said Damon. Erasmus's fingers loosened, trembling, and then slowly lifted the fabric. Damon looked at what had been done, at what three times had been done.
"The regent did this?"
"Speak freely."
"No. On the day we arrived, there was a test of obedience. I failed.
"This was your punishment for failure?"
"This was the test. I was ordered not to make any sound."
Damon had seen Varetian arrogance and Varetian cruelty. He had suffered Varetian insults, had endured the sting of the lash and the violence of the ring, but he had not known anger until now.
"You didn't fail," said Damon.
"That you tried at all proves your courage. What was asked of you was impossible. There's no shame in what happened to you. Except for the people who had done this, there was shame and disgrace on every one of them, and Damon would hold them to account for what they had done.
Damon said, "Tell me everything that has happened to you since you left Akelos."
Erasmus spoke matter-of-factly. The story was disturbing. The slaves had been transported aboard the ship in cages below deck. Handlers and sailors alike had taken liberties. One of the women, worried about the lack of access to any usual means of preventing pregnancy, had tried to communicate the problem to her Varetian handlers, not realizing that to them, illegitimate birth was a horror. The idea that they might be delivering a slave to the regent with a sailor's bastard growing in her belly caused them to panic. The ship's physic had given her some sort of concoction that induced sweats and nausea. Concerned it would not be enough, her stomach was beaten with rocks. That was before they docked in Veer. In Veer, the problem was one of neglect. The regent had not taken any of the slaves to bed. The regent was a largely absent figure, busy with affairs of state, served by pets of his own choosing. The slaves were left to their handlers and to the vagaries of a bored court. Reading between the lines, Damon could tell that they were treated as animals, their obedience a parlor trick, and the tests, thought up by the sophisticated court, which the slaves struggled to perform, were in some cases truly sadistic, as in the case of Erasmus. Damon felt sick.
"You must crave freedom more than I do," said Damon.
The slave's courage made him feel ashamed.
"Freedom?" said Erasmus, sounding scared for the first time. "Why would I want that? I cannot. I am made for a master."
"You were made for better masters than these. You deserve someone who appreciates your worth." Erasmus flushed and said nothing.
"I promise you," said Damon, "I will find a way to help you."
"I wish," said Erasmus.
"You wish?"
"I wish I could believe you," said Erasmus. "You talk like a master, but you are a slave, like I am."
Before Damon could reply, there was a sound from the pads, and, as he had done once before, Erasmus prostrated himself, anticipating the arrival of another courtier. Voices from the path.
"Where's the regent's slave?"
"Back there."
"And then rounding the corner."
"There you are." "And then, and look who else they let out."
It was not a courtier. It was not petite, malicious, exquisite Nicaise. It was coarse-featured, broken-nosed Govar. He spoke to Damon, who had last faced him in the ring in a desperate grapple for purchase and mastery. Govar casually clasped the back of Erasmus's gold collar and dragged him up by it, as an uncaring owner might heft a dog around. Erasmus, a boy, not a dog, choked violently as the collar dug into his tender throat, caught at the join of neck and jaw just above his Adam's apple.
"Shut up!"
Govar, irritated by the coughing, slapped him hard across the face. Damon felt the jerk of restraint as his body hit the limits of his chains, heard the metallic sound before he even realized he'd reacted. "Let him go!"
"You want me to?"
He shook Erasmus by the collar for punctuation. Erasmus, who had understood shut up, was wet-eyed from the brief choking, but silent.
"Don't think I will. Got told to haul him back. No one said I couldn't enjoy myself on the way."
Damon said, "If you want another go-around, all you have to do is take a step forward." It would please him a great deal to hurt Govar.
"I'd rather fuck your sweetheart," said Govar. "The way I figure it, I'm owed a fuck."
As he spoke, Govar pushed up the slave tunic, revealing the curves beneath. Erasmus didn't struggle when Govar kicked his ankles apart and lifted his arms up. He let himself be manhandled and then stayed in position, awkwardly bent over. The realization that Govar was going to fuck Erasmus right here in front of him hit with the same sense of unreality that he'd felt when faced with Ansel. It wasn't possible that something like this was going to happen, that this court was so depraved that a mercenary could rape a royal slave a scant distance from the gathered court. There was no one within hearing distance except for the disinterested guard. Erasmus's face, red with humiliation, was turned determinedly away from Damon.
"The way I figure it," Govar used this phrase again, "your master's the one who fucked us both. He's the one who should really be getting it. But in the dark, one blonde's as good as another."
"Better," said Govar.
"Stick your cock in that frigid bitch, he'd freeze it off. This one likes it."
He did something with his hand under the bunched-up tunic. Erasmus made a sound. Damon jerked, and this time the harsh metallic noise suggested loudly that the ancient iron was about to give. The sound of it shook the guard loose from his post.
"There's some problem?"
"He doesn't like me fucking his little slave friend," said Govar.
Erasmus, mortifyingly exposed, looked like he was silently breaking down.
"Fuck him somewhere else, then," the guard said.
Govar smiled. Then he pushed Erasmus hard in the small of the back.
"I will," Govar said,
shoving Erasmus ahead of him. He disappeared along the paths, and there was absolutely nothing Damon could do to stop him. Night turned to morning. The garden entertainments ended. Damon was deposited back in his room, clean and tended and chained and powerless. Laurent's prediction regarding the reaction of the guards and the servants and all the members of his retinue turned out to be stingingly accurate. Laurent's household reacted to collusion with the regent with anger and enmity. The fragile relationships Damon had managed to build were gone. It was the worst possible time for a change in attitude. Now, when those relationships might have brought him news or been able in some small way to influence the treatment of the slaves, he had no thought of his own freedom. There was only the constant pull of concern and of responsibility. To escape alone would be an act of selfishness and betrayal. He could not leave, not if it meant abandoning the others to their fate. And yet he was totally without power to effect any change in their circumstances. Erasmus was right. His promise to help was an empty one. Outside his room, several things were happening. The first was that, in response to the regent's edict, the prince's household was being cut back. Without access to income from his various estates, Laurent's retinue was substantially diminished and his spending curtailed. In the whirlwind of changes, Damon's room was moved from the royal pet residences to somewhere inside Laurent's wing of the palace. It didn't help him. His new room had the same number of guards, the same pallet, the same silks and cushions, the same iron link in the floor, though this one looked newly installed. Even short of funds, Laurent didn't seem inclined to skimp on security for his Accolon prisoner. Unfortunately. From snippets of overheard conversation, Damon learned that elsewhere, the delegation from Patras had arrived to discuss trade with Vir. Patras bordered on Akalos and was a country of similar culture, not traditionally an ally of Vir. The news of talks concerned him. Was the delegation here simply to discuss trade, or was it part of some larger shift in the political landscape? He had about as much luck finding out the business of the patron delegation as he had had in helping the slaves, which was to say, none at all. There had to be something he could do. There was nothing he could do. To face his own powerlessness was awful. He had at no point since his capture truly thought of himself as a slave. He had played lip service to the role, at best. He had viewed punishments as no more than minor obstacles, because this situation in his mind was temporary. He had believed that escape was in his future. He still believed that. He wanted to be free. He wanted to find his way home. He wanted to stand in the capital, raised on its marble pillars, and look out over the greens and blues of mountains and ocean. He wanted to face Castor, his brother, and ask him, man to man, why he had done what he had done. But life in Akalos went on without Damianos. These slaves had no one else to help them. And what did it mean to be a prince if he did not strive to protect those weaker than himself? The sun, sinking low in the sky, brought light into his room through the grilled windows. When Radel entered, Damon begged an audience with the prince. Radel, with obvious relish, refused. The prince, said Radel, did not care to trouble himself with a turncoat Akalon slave. He had more exalted business to attend to. Tonight there was a banquet in honor of the patron ambassador. 18 courses, and the most talented pets entertaining with dance and games and performance. Knowing patron culture, Damon could only imagine the reaction of the delegation to the more inventive entertainments of the Varetian court. But he stayed silent as Radel described the glory of the table, and the courses in detail, and the wines, mulberry wine and fruit wine, and sinapel. Damon was not fit for that company. Damon was not fit to eat the leavings from the table. Radel, having made his point at satisfactory length, left. Damon waited. He knew that Radel would be obliged to pass on the request. He had no illusions about his relative importance to Laurent's household. But if nothing else, his inadvertent role in Laurent's power struggle with his uncle meant that his request for an audience would not be ignored, would probably not be ignored. He settled in, knowing that Laurent would make him wait. Surely not longer than a day or two, he thought. That was what he thought, and so when night came, he slept. He woke amid crushed pillows and disturbed silken sheets to find that Laurent's cool blue gaze was on him. The torches were lit, and the servants who had lit them were withdrawing. Damon moved, silk, skin warm, slid away completely to pool among the cushions as he pushed himself up. Laurent paid it no attention. Damon recalled that a visit from Laurent had woken him from sleep once before. It was closer to dawn than sunset. Laurent was dressed in court clothes, having come, presumably, after the 18th course and whatever nightly entertainments had followed. Not drunk this time. Damon had expected a long, excruciating wait. There was slight resistance from the chain as it dragged across the cushions following his movement. He thought about what he had to do, and why he had to do it. Very deliberately, he knelt and bowed his head, and lowered his eyes to the floor. For a moment it was so quiet that he could hear the flames from the torches fluttering in the air. "This is new," said Laurent. "There's something I want," said Damon. "Something you want," the same words precisely enunciated. He had known it was not going to be easy. Even with someone else, not this cold, unpleasant prince, it would not be easy. "You get something in return," said Damon. He set his jaw as Laurent slowly paced around him, as though simply interested in viewing him from all angles. Laurent stepped mincingly over the chain that lay slack on the ground, completing his tour. "Are you misguided enough to try to bargain with me? What could you possibly offer that I would want?" "Obedience," said Damon. He felt Laurent react to that idea. Subtly, but unmistakably, the interest was there. Damon tried not to think too much about what he was offering, what it would mean to keep this promise. He would face that future when he came to it. "You want me to submit. I'll do it. You want me to publicly earn the punishment that your uncle won't let you mete out? Whatever performance you want from me, you'll have it. I will throw myself on the sword in exchange for one thing." "Let me guess. You want me to take off your chains, or reduce your guard, or put you in a room where the doors and windows are unbarred? Don't waste your breath." Damon forced the anger down. It was more important to be clear. "I don't think the slaves in your uncle's care are well treated. do something about it, and the bargain is made.
The slaves, Laurent said, after a slight pause, and then with renewed drawling scorn. Am I supposed to believe that you care about their welfare? How exactly would they be treated better in Akalas? It is your barbaric society that forced them into slavery, not mine. I would not have thought it possible to train the will out of a man, but you have managed it. Congratulations. Your show of compassion rings false. Damon said, one of the handlers took a heated iron from the fire to test whether the slave would obey an order to stay silent while he used it. I don't know if that is usual practice in this place, but good men don't torture slaves in Akalas. Slaves are trained to obey in all things, but their submission is a pact. They give up free will in exchange for perfect treatment. To abuse someone who cannot resist? Isn't that monstrous? Damon continued. Please, they're not like me. They're not soldiers. They haven't killed anyone. They're innocent. They will serve you willingly, and so will I, if you do something to help them. There was a long silence. Laurent's expression had changed. Finally, Laurent said, "You overestimate my influence over my uncle." Damon began to speak, but Laurent cut him off. "No, I..." Laurent's golden brows had drawn slightly together as though he had encountered something that did not make sense. "You would really sacrifice your pride over the fate of a handful of slaves?" He had worn the same look on his face at the ring. He was gazing at Damon as though he was searching for an answer to an unexpected problem. "Why?" Anger and frustration broke free of their bonds. "Because I am stuck here in this cage, and I have no other way to help them." He heard the rage lash in his voice and tried to force it down with limited success. His breathing was uneven. Laurent was staring at him. The little golden frown was etched deeper. After a moment, Laurent gestured to the guard at the door, and Radel was summoned. He arrived presently. Without taking his eyes off Damon, Laurent said, "Has anyone been in or out of this room?" "No one but your own staff, Your Highness, as you ordered." "Which of the staff?" Radel recited a list of names. Laurent said, "I want to speak to the guards who are watching over the slave in the gardens." "I'll send for them personally," said Radel, departing on the errand. "You think this is a trick," said Damon. He could see from the assessing look on Laurent's face that he was right. The bitter laughter just came out. "Something amuses you," said Laurent. "What would I have to gain from..." Damon broke off. "I don't know how to convince you. You don't do anything without a dozen motives. You lie even to your own uncle. This is a country of deviousness and deception. Whereas pure Akalas is free of treachery, the heir dies on the same night as the king, and it is merely coincidence that smiles on Castor," said Laurent, silkily. "You should kiss the floor when you beg for my favor." Of course Laurent would invoke Castor. They were alike. Damon forcibly reminded himself of why he was here. "I apologize. I spoke out of turn," grittily. Laurent said, "If this is a fabrication, if I find you have been moonlighting with emissaries from my uncle..." "I haven't," said Damon. The guard took a little longer to rouse than Radel, who presumably never slept, but they arrived reasonably promptly. Dressed in livery and looking alert, rather than, as might be expected, yawning and trailing bed linen. "I want to know who spoke with the slave the night you watched over him in the gardens," said Laurent. "Nicaise and Vanis I know about." "That was it," came the answer. "There was no other." And then, as Damon felt a sick sensation in his stomach, "No, wait."
"Oh?"
"After you left," the guard said.
"He got a visit from Govar."
Laurent turned back to Damon, blue eyes like ice. "No," said Damon, knowing Laurent believed this now to be some scheme of his uncle's. "It's not what you think." But it was too late. "Shut him up," said Laurent.
Try not to leave any new marks. He's caused enough trouble for me as it is.
Chapter 7. Seeing no reason whatsoever to cooperate with that order, Damon stood up. It had an interesting effect on the guard, who brought up short and swung his gaze back to Laurent, seeking further guidance. Radel was also in the room, and at the door stood the two guards who were on watch. Laurent narrowed his eyes at the problem, but offered no immediate solution. Damon said, "You could bring in more men." Behind him were strewn the cushions and rumpled silk sheets, and trailing across the floor was the single chain linked to his wrist cuff that was no impediment to movement at all. "You are really courting danger tonight," Laurent said. "Am I? I thought I was appealing to your better nature. Order whatever punishment you like from the coward's distance of a chain length. You and Govar are two of a kind." It was not Laurent, but the guard who reacted, steel flashing out of the sheath. "Watch your mouth!" He was wearing livery, not armor. The threat was negligible. Damon looked at his drawn sword with scorn. "You're no better. You saw what Govar was doing. You did nothing to stop him." Laurent raised a hand, halting the guard before he could take another angry step forward. "What was it he was doing?" said Laurent. The guard stepped back, then shrugged. "Raping one of the slaves." There was a pause, but if Laurent had any reaction to these words, it didn't show on his face. Laurent transferred his gaze back to Damon and said pleasantly, "Does that bother you? I recall you being free with your own hands, not so very long ago." That was... Damon flushed. He wanted to deny that he'd done anything of the kind, but he remembered rather unequivocally that he had. "I promise you, Govar did a great deal more than simply enjoy the view." "To a slave," Laurent said. "The prince's guard doesn't interfere with the regency. Govar can stick his cock into anything of my uncle's he likes." Damon made a sound of disgust. "With your blessing?" "Why not?" said Laurent. His voice was honeyed. "He certainly had my blessing to fuck you, but it turned out he'd rather take a blow to the head. Disappointing, but I can't fault his taste. Then again, maybe if you had spread in the ring, Govar wouldn't have been so hot to get inside your friend," Damon said. "This isn't a scheme of your uncle's. I don't take orders from men like Govar. You're wrong." "Wrong," said Laurent. "How lucky I am to have servants to point out my shortcomings. What makes you think I will tolerate any of this, even if I believed what you are saying to be true?" "Because you can end this conversation any time you like." With so much at stake, Damon was sick of certain kinds of exchanges, the kind Laurent favored and enjoyed and was good at. Wordplay for its own sake, words that built traps. None of it meant anything. "You're right. I can." "Leave us," Laurent said. He was gazing at Damon while he said it, but it was Radel and the guards who bowed and went out. "Very well, let us play this out. You're concerned for the well-being of the other slaves. Why hand me that kind of advantage?" "Advantage?" said Damon. "When someone doesn't like you very much, it isn't a good idea to let them know that you care about something," said Laurent. Damon felt himself turn ashen as the threat sank in. "Would it hurt worse than a lashing for me to cut down someone you care for?" said Laurent. Damon was silent. "Why do you hate us so much?" he almost said, except that he knew the answer to that question. "I don't think I need to bring in more men," said Laurent. "I think all I have to do is tell you to kneel, and you'll do it, without me lifting a finger to help anyone." "You're right," said Damon. "I can end this any time I like," said Laurent. "I haven't even begun."
"The prince's orders," Damon was told the next day, as he was stripped and redressed. And when he asked what these preparations were for,
He was told that tonight he would serve the prince at the high table. Radel, clearly disapproving of the fact that Damon was being taken into refined company, delivered a peripatetic lecture, striding up and down in Damon's room. Few pets were invited to serve their masters at the high table. To offer him this opportunity, the prince must see something in Damon that surpassed Riddell's understanding. It was pointless to instruct someone like Damon in the rudiments of polite etiquette, but he should try to keep silent, obey the prince, and refrain from attacking or molesting anyone. In Damon's experience, being taken out of his rooms at Laurent's request did not end well. His three excursions had comprised the ring, the gardens, and the baths, with a subsequent trip to the flogging post. His back was by now mostly healed, but that was of no consequence. The next time Laurent struck out, it would not be directly at him. Damon had very little power, but there was a crack that ran right down the middle of this court. If Laurent would not be persuaded, Damon must turn his attention to the regent's faction. Out of habit, he observed the security outside of his room. They were on the second floor of the palace, and the passage they walked along had a number of windows fretted by grills, looking out on an uninviting sheer drop. They also passed a number of armed men, all wearing the livery of the prince's guard. Here were the guards that had been absent from the pet residences. A surprising number of men. They could not all be here for his benefit. Did Laurent keep this kind of security about him all the time? They passed through a pair of ornate bronze doors, and Damon realized that he had been brought into Laurent's own chambers. Damon's eyes raked the interior derisively. These rooms were everything he would have expected of a princeling pampered lavishly, extravagantly, beyond reason. Decoration overran everything. The tiles were patterned, the walls intricately carved. The vantage was enchanting. This second-floor chamber had a loggia of semicircular arches that hung above gardens. Through an archway, the bedchamber could be seen. The bed was swathed in sumptuous curtains, a panoply of luxurious embellishment and carved wood. All that was missing was a rumpled, perfumed trail of clothing strewn across the floor, and a pet lounging on one of the silk-draped surfaces. There was no such evidence of habitation. In fact, amid the opulence, there were only a few personal effects. Close to Damon was a reclining couch, and a book, fanned open, revealing illuminated pages and scrollwork glinting with gold leaf. The leash Damon had worn in the gardens also lay on the couch, as though tossed there casually. Laurent emerged from the bedchamber. He had not yet closed the delicate band that collared his shirt, and white laces trailed, exposing the hollow of his throat. When he saw that Damon had arrived, he paused beneath the archway. "Leave us," said Laurent. He spoke to the handlers who had brought Damon to this chamber. They freed Damon from his restraints and departed. "Stand up," said Laurent. Damon stood. He was taller than Laurent, and physically stronger, and wearing no restraints at all. And they were alone together, as they had been last night, as they had been in the baths, but something was different. He realized that at some point he had begun to think of being alone in a room with Laurent as dangerous. Laurent detached himself from the doorway. As he drew close to Damon, his expression soured, his blue eyes curdled with distaste. Laurent said, "There is no bargain between us. A prince does not make deals with slaves and insects. Your promises are worth less to me than dirt. Do you understand me?" "Perfectly," said Damon. Laurent was staring at him coldly. "Torvald of Patras may be persuaded to request that the slaves go with him to Basel, as part of the trade deal being negotiated with my uncle." Damon felt his brow furrow. This information did not make sense.
"If Torvald insists strongly enough,
I think my uncle will agree to some sort of loan, or more accurately, a permanent arrangement couched as a loan, so that it will not offend our allies in Akalas. It's my understanding that Patran sensibilities regarding the treatment of slaves are similar to your own.
They are.
I have spent the afternoon seeding the idea with Torvald. The deal will be finalized tonight. You will accompany me to the entertainments. It is my uncle's custom to conduct business in relaxed surroundings, said Laurent.
But, said Damon,
but icily.
Damon rethought that particular approach. He turned over the information he'd just been given, re-examined it, turned it over again.
What changed your mind? Damon said, carefully. Laurent didn't answer him, just looked at him with hostility.
Don't speak unless you ask a question. Don't contradict anything that I say. These are the rules. Break them, and I will joyfully leave your countrymen to rot.
And then, bring me the leash.
The staff to which the leash was affixed had the heavy weight of pure gold. The fragile chain was intact. It had either been repaired or replaced. Damon picked it up, not very quickly.
I'm not sure I believe anything you've just told me, Damon said.
Do you have a choice?
No.
Laurent had closed the lacings on his shirt, and the picture he now presented was immaculate.
Well, put it on, he said, with a touch of impatience.
The leash, he meant. Torvald of Patras was in the palace to negotiate a trade agreement. That much was true. Damon had heard the news from several sources. He remembered Vannis discussing the Patran delegation several nights ago in the garden. Patras had a culture similar to that of Akalas. That also was true. Perhaps the rest followed. If a consignment of slaves was on offer, Torvald would conceivably bargain for them, knowing their value. It might be true. Perhaps. Maybe. Might. Laurent was not feigning any change of heart or warmth of feeling. His wall of contempt was firmly in place, was even more evident than usual, as though this act of benevolence was forcing all his considerable dislike to the surface. Damon found that the necessity of winning Laurent over to his cause was giving way to the sobering realization that he had put the fate of the others into the hands of a volatile, malicious man he did not trust and could not predict, nor understand. He felt no new rush of warmth for Laurent. He was not inclined to believe that cruelty delivered with one hand was redeemed by a caress from the other, if that's even what this was. Nor was he naive enough to think that Laurent was acting out of any altruistic impulse. Laurent was doing this for some twisty reason of his own, if it was true. When the leash was affixed, Laurent took hold of the handler's staff and said, "You're my pet. You outrank others. You do not need to submit to the orders of anyone except myself and my uncle. If you blurt out tonight's plans to him, he will be very, very annoyed with me, which you might enjoy, but you won't like my riposte.
It's your choice, of course."
"Of course." Laurent paused on the threshold. "One more thing." They were standing beneath a high arch, which threw shadows on Laurent's face and made it difficult to read. It was a moment before he spoke. "Be careful of Nicaes, the pet you saw with Counselor Audin. You rejected him in the ring, and that is not a slight he is likely to forget."
"Counselor Audin's pet? The child?"
"Incredulous. Don't underestimate him because of his age. He has experienced things many adults have not, and his mind is no longer that of a child, though even a child may learn how to manipulate an adult. And you're mistaken. Counselor Audin is not his master. Nicaes is dangerous."
"He's 13 years old, said Damon, and found himself subjected to Laurent's long-lidded gaze.
"Is there anyone at this court who isn't my enemy?"
Not if I can help it, Laurent said.
So he's tame, said Estienne, and reached out tentatively as though to pat a wild animal. It was a question of which part of the animal he was patting. Damon knocked his hand away. Estienne gave a yelp and snatched his hand back, nursing it against his chest.
Not that tame, said Laurent. He didn't reprimand Damon. He didn't seem particularly displeased with barbaric behavior, as long as it was directed outward. Like a man who enjoys owning an animal who will rake others with its claws but eat peacefully from his own hand, he was giving his pet a great deal of license. As a result, courtiers kept one eye on Damon, giving him a wide berth. Laurent used that to his advantage, using the propensity of courtiers to fall back in reaction to Damon's presence as a means of extricating himself smoothly from conversation. The third time this happened, Damon said, "Shall I make a face at the ones you don't like, or is it enough to just look like a barbarian?"
"Shut up," said Laurent, calmly.
It was said that the Empress of Vask kept two leopards tied up by her throne. Damon tried not to feel like one of them. Before the negotiations, there were to be entertainments. Before the entertainments, a banquet. Before the banquet, this reception. There were not as many pets as there had been at the ring, but Damon did see one or two familiar faces. Across the room he saw a flash of red hair, found a pair of emerald eyes. Ansel uncurled himself from his master's arm, pressed fingers to his lips, and blew Damon a kiss. The patron delegation, when they arrived, were obvious from the cut of their clothes. Laurent greeted Torvald like an equal, which he was. Almost. In negotiations of consequence, it was common to send a man of high birth to act as ambassador. Torvald was Prince Torvald, younger brother to King Torgir of Patras, though in his case younger was relative. Torvald was a handsome man in his 40s, close to twice Damon's age. He had a neatly trimmed brown beard in the patron style, brown hair still largely untouched by gray. Relations between Akalos and Patras were friendly and extensive, but Prince Torvald and Prince Damianos had never met. Torvald had spent most of the last 18 years on Patras's northern border in dealings with the Vaskian Empire. Damon knew of him by reputation. Everyone knew of him. He had distinguished himself in the campaigns to the north when Damon was still in Swaddling. He was fifth in line to inherit, after the king's litter of 3 sons and a daughter. Torvald's brown eyes grew markedly warm and appreciative when he looked at Laurent.
"Torvald," said Laurent, "I'm afraid my uncle is delayed. While we wait, I thought you could join my pet and me for some air on the balcony."
Damon thought Laurent's uncle probably wasn't delayed. He reconciled himself to an evening of listening to Laurent lying a great deal.